Okay, welcome to the Chazar Shir for the first semester of Contemporary Halacha. The first thing that we'll talk about is Hilchas Yom Tov that Rabbi Neuberger gave. And we're going to be talking about gas stoves and lighting fires, and then later we'll talk about some other Hilchas Yom Tov in terms of Yom Tov Sheni, in terms of showering. So let's start with gas stoves. First of all, there's an Isser D'Rabbanan to light a fire on Yom Tov. There's a machlokas why there's an Isser D'Rabbanan. The Rambam says, because the din of Ochal Nefesh, which is mutter, which matters everything midaraisa, is only mutter if it's ia shola asosa me'esmol. So therefore, if you can't do it before today, like cooking, because it won't be fresh, that becomes mutter. But anything that you could have done, for example, get yourself a coal, a glowing coal from Friday, have a fire from Friday, so don't do it now, you could have had it yesterday. So therefore, the Chazal said, we're not happy that you did that. You waited for today, that's asa d'rabbanan. That's the Rambam's opinion. Rashi and Tosfos argue, and they say, you could do, we were matir because of Ochal Nefesh, even things that could have been done yesterday. Rather, there's this new takana called molid. You're making something that never existed before. You have a fire that didn't exist yesterday. Now you're making, you're manufacturing a new, previously non-existent fire on Yom Tov. That is an Isser D'Rabbanan. That was the first point. Next point. Let's talk about ovens more specifically. So if you live in the Heights and you have an old oven that has a pilot light, so you're lucky. You might not be so safe, but you're lucky because pilot lights are always ignited, and therefore there's never a question of igniting a new fire. There's only a question of being mamshich that fire, which is permitted on Yom Tov, and therefore if you have a pilot light, you can turn on your flame. Again, not only with the old pilot lights like I have, you can turn on a flame on Yom Tov. However, if you have if you live in other states where pilot lights are prohibited or illegal, or you have a kitchen that's newer than, you know, the past 30, 40 years, and therefore you have an electric ignition, that of course is a real ignition, either with a spark or creating a new current, which we'll talk about in terms of the halachas of electricity, and that will of course be also because that's initiating, that's igniting a fire. And let's talk about Shabbos mode ovens and how that relates to using them on Yom Tov. The moral of the story is that our Rebbeim do not like Shabbos mode ovens. And Rabbi Neuberger felt that it's very important to be careful about that because Balabatim don't like when rabbis make things difficult. And this might be an area where a rabbi might. Let's talk about what Shabbos mode ovens do. First of all, there are three things that they do. One is wonderful, the second is wonderful, the third is less wonderful. Some ovens have 12-hour cutoffs, so if you leave the oven on for 12 hours, or just cut it off after 12 hours, that's not so convenient if you have a Yom Tov or a 3-day Yom Tov, certainly, even a 1-day Yom Tov, because then you're not going to have anything warm the next day. So if you have a Shabbos mode, there's no 12-hour cutoff, the flame will continue, keep your food warm, that's wonderful. Second thing is when you press buttons, there's no digital display. That's wonderful that when you press buttons, there won't be a digital display, but there will still be problematic, because you're pressing the button, and let's see the next thing. The next thing that Rav Heinemann created, and the Star K gives Hashkacha, and worked out with General Electric, and perhaps some of the other companies, is a grumma set up within the Shabbos mode of the oven, such that you press your button and adjust whatever you want on the oven, nothing happens. However, the oven is continually going through some cycle to pick up on changes. And then 3 seconds later, it goes through its cycle and says, oh, something's different now, and let me react to whatever different thing I find now that I'm going through my cycle. This is your oven talking. As your oven does that, it will then do whatever it was told to do, as it did its cycle. So Rav Heinemann understands that that's grama, because you did an action. Did it cause anything? No. 3 seconds later, there was a change that was picked up by the cycle of the oven. So that's Rav Heinemann understands it's grama, and therefore, listen carefully because of the key line, the Isser D'Rabbanan of lighting a fire on Shabbos, we started off in the first point saying, is only Midrabbanan. And it's grama. Sorry? I'm sorry, on Yom Tov. Thank you. Only on Yom Tov, of course. You have an Isser D'Rabbanan at hand. And it's grama. And it's the Tzorach HaOchal Nefesh. So a gram, Havar, which is only Midrabbanan, the Tzorach HaOchal Nefesh altogether, is going to be mutter. That's Rav Heinemann's kula. That's how Shabbos mode oven works. Our problem with that is only in one point. That it's not grama. What does grama mean? Grama means you do something, And then something else ended up happening. Meaning, let me rephrase that. The way most poskim understand, or at least the Neuberger was suggesting, is that you do something, and then there's a koch acher from somewhere else. I poured water on the floor. And then a fire comes from somewhere else and gets to the water and extinguishes itself on the water that I poured on the floor. That's Kerma, where there's something from an outside, I set up the system, something comes from the outside. However, in this Shabbos mode oven, you're creating yourself a setup, a one unique, one single uni system that within the system is built in that you do this and then that will happen. That's not Kerma. Kerma has to have some external Koch Acham Urevbo in order for it to constitute Kerma, and therefore the fact that there's a 2 second time delay and the very system that you press the button pick that change up 2 seconds later, that Rav Neuberger was arguing does not constitute Kerma. And therefore the whole Shabbos mode falls away. You cannot make any adjustments whenever you press the button. You're just causing the oven to pick up, the same oven that you pressed to pick up it, that change 2 seconds later. That will not constitute Kerma. You will not have the kula of Gram Havara Letzorach Olchel Nefesh. That's the end of Shabbos ovens. Next point. Can I open the door on an oven? Well, on Shabbos, you cannot open the door of an oven because whenever you open, all of our ovens have thermostats. And let's say the oven's supposed to be at 350. When you open the door, some of the hot air escapes. The temperature gauge inside your oven goes down to 270, 260. And within a few seconds, the oven is smart enough to turn itself back on to get to the whatever heat you wanted, to 350, 300.
Why is that not Kerma?
Because on Shabbos, Kerma doesn't help you.
Oh.
Right, on Shabbos. However, on Yontif, as you just pointed out, that, well, it might not be Kerma, even if it would be a psik resh, it would still be a psik resh. Let's say opening the oven would be a psik resh to cause this havara to happen. Let's say it will happen certainly, unquestionably, pretty soon thereafter, that will definitely be a psik resha, if it will definitely happen, which it will. But it's a psik resha, since Yontif is only, Havara is only a derabbanan, it's a psik resha. On a derabbanan of Havara, again, the key is that Havara on Yontif is only a derabbanan, so a psik resha. On a derabbanan, which, if it's Letzorach Mitzvah, is going to be mutter. So therefore, on Yontif, you are permitted to open an oven, even if the oven itself will relight itself to maintain its initial temperature.
Sorry.
That's the end of that point.
Sorry.
They're one and the same. Okay, next point. Can I ask a guy...
Are they the same? Is there a difference between having the food for Suri's Yontif and for an Echim Sek?
I think both would constitute the Ochel Nefesh.
But Zorach Mitzvah is different than
Ochel Nefesh, I'm saying. Okay, next point. Can I ask a guy to turn on an oven? When is this applicable? This means you're going out for the first night of Yontif. And you're going to be home for lunch, so you don't want to leave it on the whole Yontif, just for that one lunch you're going to be there. So could you have somebody who works in your house, or the next door neighbor, or the super, turn on your oven for you on, you know, for lunch the next day when you will be home, so you don't have to leave the oven on the whole... You know, we want to be environmentally conscious, don't we? So let's think about what is going on here. Whenever I ask you guys to do something that is a shvus, a mila nachri, well, what is the issa that we're talking about? Havara, lighting a fire, which... in the first point we said today, lighting a fire on Yontif is only midrabanan, so it's a shvus to shvus. So if it will be b'makom mitzvah, it should be mutter. What would the makom mitzvah be? The makom mitzvah is that I want to have hot food on Shabbos, on Yontif, right? That's a mitzvah. It's a very big mitzvah. But wait, why don't you want to leave it on? Because you want to save money? You want to save electricity bills? That's not a mitzvah. So if your motivation is because you want to save electricity bills, then you're not. Your motivation is not. It's not a shvus to shvus makom. It's a shvus to shvus because you want to save, you know, $1.12 on your electricity bill. However, if you would never leave this oven on because you have little kids, then it's not safe, and your mother told you it's not safe, and your wife is telling you it's not safe. So then there is a genuine concern. Therefore, you do want to have your food, but you want to have at the risk of safety. So then it would constitute a tzarech mitzvah. Similarly, if it's during if it's Pesach Shavuot, it's hot outside. Even first day of Sukkot is Rosh Hashanah, and it's going to be hot in the kitchens. The kitchens don't have good air conditioners anyway because of the heat. If you can have an oven on while it's hot outside, also you don't want to have the oven on. That would constitute Tzorech Ochel Nefesh. So therefore, what it boils down to, can you ask a guy to turn on the oven if your motivation is the Tzorech Mitzvah and not a financial concern? Yes, you can, because it's a Shvus to Shvus, Amila Nachri. On Havara, on Yanta, which is only the Rabbanan, as the Tzorach Mitzvah, it's Mutter. Let's take the questions at the end, because we have a huge amount to go through. Next point. Can I turn down a fire on Yantif? This is tricky because Ramosha had a kula on this, but most people don't hold from this. So Ramosha had a kula that says that you're allowed to turn down a fire on Yantif, but we assume that, well, let's start with this. You're allowed to adjust things if it's, you're allowed to adjust fires for Ochal Nefesh purposes. Of course, you could raise a fire to cook it. Well, also, everyone knows that if you want to something not to burn, you could lower the fire. There's an important caveat that Rav Shlomo Zalman added, that when we say you can lower a fire so that whatever's sitting on the fire doesn't burn, that's only if it's really going to burn, if really dry out. If you just, it's going to get a little bit dry, the chicken won't be as juicy. That's not called lowering it with Tzorach Ochal Nefesh. It has to be that it's really going to dry out, it's really going to burn, otherwise, just take it out of the oven and you won't, and it won't get a little drier. But most poskim say that you should not turn down a flame, because if you really want something to not burn or not be the way, not have the heat where it is, just take your food off. So basically, Lamaisa, other than Ramosha, on the lower east side, they're make like this, but everybody else is machmir not to lower flames on Yantif. Unless, as I said, it's you have to keep the food warm, but it's really going to burn if you do. That would be the only unique circumstance where you would be permitted to lower the flame. End of that point. We're finished with cooking on Yantif. Let's go to Yantif Sheni. And here, Rabbi Neuberger, if anyone didn't get it clearly the first time around, felt very strongly that a person should keep 2 days. I'll just talk about a few points why. Because the minhag since the Gaonim for the past 1,200 years is like that. What is this based on? Based on the fact that the halacha is whenever you go, you have a halacha, a minhag one place, and you go to somewhere else, the halacha is that you, as a visitor, always continue and maintain the minhag b'makom sheyatza misham. Where do you leave? You left Chutz La'aretz, and you're visiting Yerushalayim for Yantif. You're visiting your son-in-law, your brother-in-law, Ramat Beit Shemesh for Yantif. So you follow the minhag sheyatza misham. The minhag sheyatza misham is Teaneck or Woodmere or Cleveland or St. Louis or Washington Heights. So you'll continue with your minhag of keeping 2 days. Of course, you'll tell me that the Chassid Chacham Tzvi had a chiddush, and based upon his chiddush is the source for where people keep 1 day. What was the Chacham Tzvi's chiddush? Aragel Achas. When do we say that you keep the minhag sheyatza misham? If you could continue keeping it in that place where you're going to, meaning if you go to some place and you keep your minhag sheyatza misham, even if you decide to move there and stay in this new place that you're visiting, then you keep your original minhag. But here says the Chacham Tzvi, if you decide to move to Eretz Yisrael, could you still keep that minhag sheyatza misham? Could you still keep 2 days Yantif once you decide to stay and live in Eretz Yisrael? No, because on the second day of Yantif, you'll be saying all those brachas levatala. So therefore, says the Chacham Tzvi, this whole halacha of keeping the minhag sheyatza misham would not apply to the situation of Yantif Sheni. However, the Chacham Tzvi was rejected by most of the poskim. In fact, does anyone know what the Yavetz stands for? Yud, Ayin, Beis, Tzadi. Yaakov Emden Ben Tzvi. So whose son was he? Chacham Tzvi. And who did he argue on? Chacham Tzvi. The Yavetz himself argued on his own father. And there were some Sephardi poskim with Father Chacham Tzvi, but Rabbi Yoshev takes it so far to say that he shouldn't be, the Chacham Tzvi should not even be a sniffle of hakel. When you figure out a complicated shot, even a sniffle of hakel should not be. Rav Shlomo Zalman is a little more makeless, and he holds that at least could be a tziruf and makom safek. You can at least be with sari if the shita of the Chacham Tzvi, but Rav Yosh didn't even hold you could do that. Of course, the only thing that changed is socially, you know, how we spend our yontifs, how often we visit, and how it's inconvenient, and that's what changes. But again, as a rabbi, you have to be strong in terms of what is proper, what is halacha, and therefore most posts can hold like Rav Moshe that you should keep 2 days. I will tell you a shaila that I got on 3 months ago. A young lady, a single woman, whose family goes to Israel. They have a house there, and they go for sukkahs. And the family, whatever I would say, had nothing to do with. They were going to keep 1 day, and she felt very, very torn because she is a person who is, let's say, more traditional in her perspective. And halacha, like we're saying, 2 days yantif. But if she would do that with her family, they would shechter, and we saw that ochel nefesh. Okay, So it wouldn't be good for the family if she would keep on. It would cause mamish World War III. So I spoke to Shechter about it, and he came out with a wonderful kula. He said that, assuming that the family is following a psak, which they were, there would be an issue of lotus go to do if within the same house she would keep otherwise. So therefore, she, since she's in the same house as they are, would be over lotus go to do by keeping a second day if no one else in that house. So as long as, even though she as an individual should keep 2 days, but if she's in the house where everyone else would be keeping, where her own family would be keeping one, that specific scenario, Shechtish felt, and I wasn't even trying to get a kula out of him. He said, even Mechatchila, she should only keep 1 day, which made this young lady very happy, and we solved World War III. Easy enough. I should get the Nobel Prize almost as quickly as some other people. Fine. If you're in Eretz Yisrael and you want to make a chutz la'aretz minyan, can you? While we're talking about lotus go to do, let's look at the Avkas Rochel, the Beis Yosef's Avkas Rochel, and the Avkas Rochel, which presumably is the Reh Yosef Karo, might not be, but presumably, he has a lotus go to do is only going to be asur if yetze mimenu churva. That means that by being different, you're going to cause a problem. So let's say, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, and you want to be frum and keep a second day, is anyone going to do anything wrong because of that? Is there a churva? Is anyone going to do malacha because of you? No. So go ahead, do your different thing. There won't be a din of lotus go to do, and make your minyan. What will be the inverse? Let's say a bunch of Israelis come and visit America, and they want to make their minyan. So they're going to make a weekday minyan on the second day of Yontif. Is there a potential for a churva to come out of it? Sure, you're having a weekday minyan where we're all celebrating Yontif Sheni. People are going to start doing malacha. So there will be lotus go to do. So we have here, according to Zavkas Rochel, is a one-way street, not a two-way street. If Bnei Eretz Yisrael come to America, they cannot make a second-day weekday minyan. If we go to Eretz Yisrael, we would be able to make a minyan on the second day of Yontif, because there won't be any churva that will come out of it. Finally, last point about Yontif is showering. There are two problems with showering. First of all, as you shower, you're heating up water, might not be shovel achol nefesh, so we might not have the heter of achol nefesh of having more water being heated. Second, there's a separate and independent gzera d'rabbanim, gzeras habalanim, the people who work in the bathhouses, and there's machlokas where the gzeras habalanim only applies on Shabbos or also on Yontif, and most Rishon are machmir, therefore we have a problem not to go into hot water on Yontif. However, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Moshe has a kula about showering. It wasn't brought up in Rav Neuberger's shir, but you could look up the Igros Moshe. But Rav Neuberger came halacha maisa and said the following pshara: if it's a 3-day yontif, and you're mitztayer, so then on the yontif sheni, this is his compromise. On the yontif sheni, which is anyway only a drabbanon, you could take a shower and only make it lukewarm, because the whole gzeres habalanim in the first place is only on hot water. Is in machloka. Some hold that's only on hot water. Some hold it's even if it's warm. So you could be maker, you could be mitzari things. Only drabbanon and gzeres habalanim might only apply in hot water, not in lukewarm water. So that's Rabbi Neuberger's compromise. Kula again, three parts to it. A 3-day yontif, do it on the day that's only on yontif sheni midrabbanon, and C, use lukewarm water, and of course only if you're mitzari. Next shir. We're now up to the fasting on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Neuberger's shir. Dan Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, that bezin of the Eda Charedis, paskin that nowadays pregnant women do not have to fast on Yom Kippur because Chalishas Hadoros, so many people are mapil, and therefore it's better that they should all eat Papos Mikashir on Yom Kippur. And Rabbi Neuberger and many others rejected this outright, numerous counts. First of all, how can you say it is a chalishas hadoros? Our women today have better nutrients and are better nourished than any generation of me'ubaros. So don't say we're weaker. Who says? Maybe we're even better. Secondly, just look at the data. There have been numerous studies, two studies from Eretz Yisrael and from the Arabs in Ramadan, seeing if fasting causes births to happen in a way that's unsafe. And there's a statistically insignificant difference based on research that fasting causes problems. And finally, maybe Rav Fisher did know scenarios where people, or there were pilos, people, babies died because, fetuses died because of because their mothers fasted, but that might have been, including in his perspective, high-risk pregnancies where the woman shouldn't have fasted in the first place. So either way, that shita, Rav Dayan Fisher, is not really accepted By the way, it was well known in Eretz Yisrael when Dayan Fisher died not long ago, 10 years ago. I mean, I remember when he was alive. I was in Eretz Yisrael, I think, when he was alive. It was well known that when Dayan Fisher was alive, the day before a fast, there'd be a line out the door of all the women looking to get a kula. I know he was naked on all the fast days for women. Because if you're pregnant, you shouldn't fast. If you're not pregnant, you must be sick, so you also shouldn't fast. So, fine. Dayel Chakiv Ramiza. Another reason why Dayan Fisher was rejected, two more reasons, is because even if you say that there was somebody who was Mapil, there were a few people Mapil, but still, percentage-wise, compared to the whole population, pregnant women who are fast, and every pregnant, you know, most pregnant women fast over Yom Kippur, unless you happen to work it out the 3 months, you know, you became pregnant 3 months after Yom Kippur and had your baby right before Yom Kippur, but most, you know, 75% of the women, probably higher, have pregnancies over Yom Kippur and fast, and the percentage of people who did, God forbid, something happened to them is so tiny. And finally, Rav Dayan Fisher would suggest that Nishtanu HaTvayim, but what do you mean? You're saying Nishtanu HaTvayim on something that's Paskin the Shulchan Aruch, and I'm saying that's been the minute for all generations until, you know, you became the Abbez and the Haredes. So, I don't mean it in a derogatory way. Okay, let's talk about situations where a pregnant woman does, unique circumstances where a pregnant woman does have to break her fast. I'm going to list off 8 scenarios. That'll be the next topic. Fine. A woman who had 2 miscarriages due to dehydration. There was a woman in my shul who is pregnant, b'shatav mitzlachas, and I believe that her situation was that she had a number of miscarriages, possibly because of dehydration, and I believe she did drink shiurim on Yom Kippur because of that. Next situation, if she's at risk for preterm delivery. Third situation, if she's in the 7th or 8th month and there are already labor pains, and sometimes this has to be discussed with the doctor. If there are any labor pains, you have to talk to the doctor. Will her fasting cause her to go into labor and therefore cause a problem at that stage in the pregnancy when the lungs are not sufficiently developed? Speak to a doctor about it. Fourth, and this is probably the most common, if on Yom Kippur itself, a woman demonstrates signs of dehydration. Now, this is nothing to do with pregnant woman or not a pregnant woman. Dehydration itself is a situation of pikuach nefesh. And if anybody indicates signs of dehydration, they should drink. Now, what are signs of dehydration? They're unusually bad headaches. They're, even after you sit down, you're still dizzy, feel faint. Those are indications of dehydration. Now, here is a very important thing that Chasam Sofer says, but you don't need the Chasam Sofer to say it. It's more important, and this is just the hard job of the rabbi, to convince the women who are very attached emotionally to Yom Kippur, that it's more important to fast than to go to shul, of course. It's obvious. It's a chiyuv kares as opposed to missing a minyan. That's what it boils down to, but I don't think you could be so blunt. And a very important thing that I never knew, what Torah Neuberger says, very important. Rosh Shlomo Zalman said that if by staying home and by staying in bed all day long, you're going to preempt the need to have one extra, you know, shear, meaning ounce every 10 minutes or whatever we'll see in a moment, if you could save one of those just by staying in bed all Yontif, stay in bed all Yom Kippur to avoid that one extra shear that you might have otherwise had to. Fine. Number 5, for which a woman would have to break her fast, is if there's early bleeding, meaning if it's early in the pregnancy, bleeding could sometimes indicate the beginning of a miscarriage or there's a chashash for miscarriage, and of course that discussed with the doctor beforehand if there was early bleeding, what the situation is. If she has contractions and other lacks fetal movement, that's another sign of a woman possibly dehydrating, and we tell a woman if you don't feel the baby bumping around, kicking for a half hour or so take a drink. Usually we say instead of drinking water if you're in Yom Kippur, she might as well just have grape juice, which has a lot of sugar, more sugar than even orange juice. Have a little ounce of grape juice, and hopefully the sugar and the liquid will get the baby moving. If after that you still don't feel baby movement, then just drink whatever you have to drink. Finally, the 9th month, there's the following question. Let's say it's on Yom Kippur. She's in shul, she's not in shul, and she starts, I feel something. There's all these contractions, she starts getting labor pains. So here, should she eat? Well, Zion Fisher says, why should she eat? It's funny because the same Diane Fisher who said before that every pregnant woman doesn't have to, but here, once she's in labor period, okay, she was fasting, why should she eat? She's in her ninth month, she'll give birth, wonderful. She's not eating, the baby doesn't have any food inside, the baby's going to kick its way out. Great, let the baby kick its way out. Rav Nevin Sal, however, said that babies don't just kick their way out, you have to push them out, and sometimes it takes a huge amount of energy to push them out, and therefore she would be able to drink so that she has strength to give birth. And in this scenario, Neuberger had a sort of a compromised position. He said, if it's later in the day, it's Yom Kippur afternoon, that's many hours after she had the, her Sudam Hafsekes, so she will need the food to give her energy. But if she just had Sudam Hafsekes 3, 4, 5 hours ago, it's okay. She has plenty of energy from the food and drink she had. In the Sudam Hafsekes, no need to drink now. Finally, last scenario is when you do have to do, if a woman does have to drink, again, if it has to be a lot, let it be a lot. How do you do drink Bishiurim? 1 ounce of liquid, again, not water, use grape juice or even better than orange juice, and every 9 minutes. If that's not sufficient, which ends up going to be about six ounces per hour, if that's not enough based on discussion with the doctor or her, then be make on 7 minutes, 6 minutes, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, obviously work with the doctors. The next point is a very, very, very important point, and as a rabbi, I could assure you, get the following question. A woman is pregnant, and based on what we said, if she's going to dehydrate, she's going to have to drink, and possibly a lot. And she comes to you and says, I have two options. I could either see how it goes. I won't eat. I don't see what happens. But if something comes up, I'm going to have to drink a lot. The other choice is, let me just start the day from the beginning, drinking bishiurim, and this way I will never violate the Isser Kares violate the Inui. So here, Renuberger said that if she might be able to make it through fasting, she should try to fast. And if it ends up that she'll have to drink, okay, so she'll have to drink. Let's do the last point about Yom Kippur, and that's if a woman is nursing on Yom Kippur. And here, women get very agitated about these issues, and sometimes part of the role is not just to tell what the halacha is, but also to, calm people down. If you ever speak to a lactation expert, they're even more hypersensitive to these issues, and you have to, again, be very careful about, sometimes lactation experts will tell you if you ever let the baby not get the natural mother's milk, then the baby's just going to drop dead and die, like within a day or two, which probably will not happen. But I don't want to have any responsibilities on record, so just be sensitive, but don't let somebody pull the wool over your eyes. If a woman is nursing, so if the following four situations are present, then she could drink a little bit. The baby doesn't take formula, refusing to take formula. The mother doesn't have any milk, and the baby's getting angry. And you have a long time till the fast is over. If you have those four scenarios, then the mother could drink. Within nursing, just one final point, sometimes you have a situation, it's a new baby, babies don't start formula till, depending on who the mother is, but sometimes 3, 4, 5, 6, it depends on what the situation. But certainly the first few months, oftentimes they nurse, and then only afterwards they took formula. Let's say you have a woman who gives birth shortly before Yom Kippur. So the baby has only nurse fed and never taken formula. So if the woman doesn't drink, she'll say, maybe I'm going to lose my milk. So we'll tell her, if there are no health issues that we have to be worried about in terms of the baby, no feeding issues with the baby, so then she's required to fast, even if it will risk a mother losing her milk. And this is something that I once, in a conversation with a lactation expert, she was very unhappy about the fact that rabbis said this, but I guess she's not a rabbi, she's a lactation expert. Fine. We're now finished with the shiur about Yom Kippur. Let's go to Sukkos. Rabbi Konigsberg Sukkos shiur. First of all, how big does a sukkah have to be? So we have a three-way machlokas, Tanaim, Vishame says Rosh Averubo, Vishulchana, which is 7x7. Beis Hillel, of course, he's going to win. He says just Rosh Averubo, that's 6 tefachim by 6 tefachim. And Rebbe says it's 4 amos by 4 amos. What is this machlokas based on? Well, Rebbe, who says that you need a real bias, is because he holds that the earth kvar be'inan. If you're familiar with the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, that's like in Sukkah, that's like Rabbi Yehuda. But the other opinions hold you as a Rabbin, and therefore you don't have a Din Bias. And we, of course, Paskin. We pass like Beis Shammai, that it's 6 by 6. Beis Shammai holds 6 by 6. This is one of the exceptions that we do pass like Beis Shammai.
7 by 7.
We pass like Beis Shammai, 7 by 7.
Thank you. Zerah Ruba, Vishulchana. What? Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Rebbe. And we pass like Beis Shammai, that's Rosh of Ruba, Vishulchana, which is 7 Tvachim by 7 Tvachim. Sorry, we got that. I had a Shaila emailed to me. This sukkah is from somebody who used to daven in the shul and moved out of town, and they're making a sukkah for the first time, and they know the halacha of Shtayin Kelechsam, Shlish Lefil Tefach. They had one wall on one side, one wall on the other side, two parallel walls, and in one of the, in that Mavi, what we'll call a Mavi Mefulish, they had a Shlish Lefil Tefach. That is against the halacha. The din of Shtayin Kelechsam, Kelechsam means as an L. If you have two walls that are not parallel one to another, but two walls that are an L, then a third wall could be a shlishes afil tefach, but we work it out that that third wall, which is going to be a tefach, is really going to be more than a tefach. It's really going to be a rove wall. Since a wall is seven tefachim, as we just said, so rove wall will be more than 3.5 tefachim, so you put that shlishes afil tefach lovud to one of those corners of your L, so you have just a little bit less, whatever, 2.9 tefachim plus your tefach of the shlishes, so you're going to get 3.9 tefachim, that's rov of a wall, and that's how you're going to have your nine kilchas on shlishes afil tefach. And I think, I don't remember, if you do have that, rely on that kula, you might also need a tzuras ha-pesach on top of the third wall that you're only having a shlishes afil tefach. So before you get into relying on shlishes afil tefach, make sure you look at the halacha carefully. Let's talk about canvas sukkahs. There are going to be two issues about canvas sukkahs. One is in terms of resting the schach on davar mekabel tumah on the metal beams. The second is going to be the walls, I think. Okay, so in terms of being sameich on davar mekabel tumah, there are a number of steps that have to be analyzed. First of all, the sugya begins with somebody who is sameich sukkaso Bekari Hamita on the bedposts. That itself is a machlokas tanam, whether it's kosher or not kosher. So if you hold it's kosher, there's no sugya of maimid, there's no sugya of maimid v'davar mekabel tumah, there's nothing to talk about. If you're like Rabbi Yehuda, who's postel, then why does Rabbi Yehuda pasla if you put your schach on top of the Kari Hamita? Some hold because it's not keva, and Rabbi Yehuda needs keva. According to that, there's also no indication of davar mekabel tumah. But the Gemara suggests maybe a different reason why Rabbi Yehuda might passel a somech sukkas of a kari mita is because he mamid the davar mekabel tumah. So again, according to Tanakama, there's no issue. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that it's also, it might be an issue of somech v'davar mekabel tumah. Why would being somech v'davar mekabel tumah be a problem? Here we have machlokes, whether it's a gzeru d'rabbanan, or it's asur mikadin. The Ram says that somech b'davar mekabel tumah is a gzera d'rabbanan, because if I rest the schach on something that's mekabel tumah, what might I think? I might think that my schach itself can be mekabel tumah, which is wrong. So rabbis made a gzera d'rabbanan. Rashi, however, sounds like it's a psul d'oraisa, because a maimid, which holds up the schach, is the schach. Or maybe I should say the opposite way. The schach is whatever was holding up the schach. And therefore, if the maimid for the schach is mekabel tumah, that gives the din of kabbalas tumah to the schach alone. It's as though you're a sochich b'davar mekabel tumah. Okay, how do we paskin all these issues? Most poskim hold like, or machmir like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is an issue at hand. There is an issue of someh b'kari hamita. It happens to be the Shulchan Aruch in this case is meko. Shulchan Aruch holds that you're allowed to be someh a sukkah b'kari hamita. So that means according to Shulchan Aruch, there's no sugya to start of, no problem whatsoever, of davar hamekabel tumah, of being mamir b'davar hamekabel tumah. The problem is, there's a different Shulchan Aruch. The other Shulchan Aruch elsewhere has a safek, brings two shitas, whether you're allowed to rest the schach on top of a ladder. And the way the Mogen Avram explains the safek of the Shulchan Aruch over there is that the ladder is a davar hamekabel tumah, and you're being mamir b'davar hamekabel tumah. And that's the safek that the Mogen Avram understands that the Shulchan Aruch is having. Are you allowed to be Ma'amid yischach b'davar mekabel tumo or not. The way the Magen Avraham has it is that the Shulchan Aruch is telling you that I'm a supek. So lichatchila, don't do it. B'diavad, if you were sochech, if you were ma'amid yischach b'davar mekabel tumo, then it will be kosher. So again, we had two Shulchan Aruchs. One said, everything's fine. The other said, I don't know. Why there are two Shulchan Aruchs saying different things? Magen Avraham's resolution is that the Shulchan Aruch says, oh, don't worry about it. You could be samech because of karamitza. That's b'di'evet. B'di'evet, you can be sochech on top of a maimed that's mekabel tuma. L'chatchila, you should know there's a machlokas. The Shulchan Aruch is not really sure. L'chatchila, avoid it. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, we should try to avoid, according to this reading of the Magen Avraham, we should try to avoid being ma'amid aschach with dava mekabel tuma. So if you go to a canvas sukkah, try to, and you're making it l'chatchila, and if your parents have it, you have it. So put a separation between the metal bars and your schach. B'dieve, you're invited to a family, or your father already made it, you came home right before Yontif, you want such a good book, because you should have been home earlier to help. B'dieve, you're in a situation where the sukkah has been made, and this is the sukkah that's available, and it is touching the metal, that will be okay, according to Magen Avraham's understanding. Now let's take it a step further. What about maimid to maimid? The Magen Avraham says that even if it's also lechatchila to have the schach on the metal, but if you have a maimid de maimid, meaning a hefsek, like I just described, that will solve the problem. Now, the Chazon Ish, everyone calls says the Chazon Ish is the one who holds that maimid de maimid is still a problem. That's not really true. The Chazon Ish holds that there's no problem whatsoever, even to start with, of being maimid schach b'dav ha-mekapel tamar. But the Chazon Ish says that according to the Magen Avraham, who says that there is a problem of ma'amid, the schach, v'dav ha-mekabel tumah, it doesn't matter if you just ma'amid the schach, means the bars, or something below the bars, or below that, or below that. Even ma'amid to ma'amid. So Chazon Ish, again, himself is makom. But he's saying, according to those who aser, ma'amid, v'dav ha-mekabel tumah, even ma'amid to ma'amid would be a problem. But halach l'maisa, as we said earlier, if you're building it, at least have one hefsek. If you're the one who, if you're ready in a situation, you could eat in it and make a bracha on the sukkah, even if the schach is sitting directly atop the metal bars. Next point. That's the end of the halacha of maimed. Next point. What about mats? Now, mats is not a new question. It's discussed in a Mishnah. There are three possible ways why you have a mat. A mat could either be made, a mat of reeds is either made for sitting, in which case it's mekabel tum, it's possible. Or it's made as a thatch roof, in which case it's not sitting, it's not a mishkav, and therefore it is not mekabel tumah, it's kosher. Or a mat was just made, manufactured, for whatever reason. That's stam. And that is going to be a shaila of, do we follow the person who bought the mats? Do we follow the person who manufactured the mats? Nowadays, it's a moot point, because all the manufacturers, when you go to Lighters Sukkahs, or EasyPopSukkah.com, or wherever you're going to go to buy your sukkah, all those mats are made expressly for l'shem schach, and you're buying l'shem schach, so therefore this mat will not have a problem in it, qua mat, in as much as it's a mat, of being mekabel tumah. There's a different issue that arises with a mat, and that's gzeiras tikra. Gzeiras tikra is a gzeira d'rabbanan of using schach that looks like a roof. What's that? Using planks of wood that are a certain size. Between 3 and 4 is machlokas, but more than 4 tzvachim is pasul, because it looks like you're putting a roof on your sukkah. So, if 4 tzvachim wide plank is pasul, well, if you have a whole mat, that's a lot more than 4 tzvachim. That should definitely be a problem with gzeiras tikra. And the Rashba adds, in the Shas HaTshuvas, that even if it's one plank attached to another plank attached to another plank, which is basically what a mat is, that also would constitute the problem of Gzeiras Tikra. Well, Rabbi Yoshev does consider this a problem, and it sounds like Rabbi Yoshev does hold that mats are problematic. So some say he was Chozer Bo. At this point, unfortunately, we are no longer able to ask him. Yimali Hashem Eschetzerneinu. But let's try to give three svaras why perhaps there won't be a Gzeiras Tikra that would thereby invalidate mats. First reason, perhaps, to be makshir mat is that it's not like a roof. A roof prevents rain from falling in. These mats don't prevent rain from falling in. A second point is that even if you're machmir, that connected mat, that connected planks one to another will be pasul, but that's if it's strong, like a tikra. Here, it's flimsy. It shakes. If I'm saying you roll it up, it's flimsy. So that also might not consider it to be a tikra, and therefore under the gzera of tikra. Finally, we're worried that it's going to look like a roof. When was the last time you saw somebody in New York with a bamboo roof? Therefore, it doesn't look like our roof, so it shouldn't be subject to gzera tikra. Those are all discussions. Seems to me that the minhag among people, I don't know if it's because it should be or just that's the way it is, it's convenient. Certainly, B'nai Yisrael have been using mats. Second problem with the mats, what about the strings themselves? The strings that hold it together are made of nylon. Nylon is a davar hameh, is an ein gidula min hakarka, and therefore it's not kosher for schach, and if it's what holds the schach together, it should be a problem. So there are three ways to solve the problem of the nylon strings that hold the mats together. The easiest one is make it out of hemp. Hemp is a natural, grown, organic material that is not a gedulah min hakarka. And even if you... That's one point. Second point, even if you do make it with string, some poskim hold that string is only a problem that leads me to midaraisa. Rashi apparently holds it's only a problem midaraisa. If the string was look at my fingers, please. What do you call that? Twined, spun, whatever it is. You understand what I mean. And therefore, some person say, if you use a monofilament cord, a monofilament nylon string, at least won't have that psul, according to Rashi, of the spun, the twined, however, whatever the right word is, that Rashi would say.
Well, that doesn't help with nylon.
What?
That doesn't help with nylon.
Right, that will help even with regular string. Right, nylon will either way be gedulah min hakarka. Rav Heinemann has another suggestion. He says very simply, when you have your mats and you have that nylon, those nylon strings holding your mats together, make them not help you. What do you mean they're helping me? They're holding up my schach, aren't they? They're holding my schach together. Well, if you put it parallel to your beams, look, I have a beam like this, holding up my mats. Well, if I have the strings in my mats also going in the same direction, so what would happen if I would take out all those strings? My beams are still holding up the schach. So is that string helping me? String's not helping me anyway. You'll figure out the mechanics and directions afterwards. Take my word for it. You'll make the chash money on time. Fine. That's the end of the discussion of mats. One thing that's very important is, especially with canvas sukkahs, let's say it's easier for you, it's faster for you, so you build the frame, the canvas frame, then you put on the schach, and then when you have free time, you'll put up the walls. That could be a very big problem of tasev lo min ha'asui, because you know the schach has to, you first have to have a wall on which you are mesachech. If you first have schach being mesachech on nothing, then when you put the walls up, that will be tasev lo min ha'asui. Next point, this is halach l'maisa for me, and I was very happy that I had heard Rabbi Kudinsberg's shir before Sukkot, because on Sukkot I went to a restaurant in Brooklyn with my children before an Uncle Moshe concert. I'm not going to get any more graphic than that, because there are a few Uncle Moshe concerts on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So you're not going to know which location I was at. One of those locations is right near a certain pizza shop. And that certain pizza shop, we went to take the kids there to get pizza before Uncle Moshe. I've been to many Uncle Moshe concerts over my Sukkot and Pesach, I have to tell you. And I looked at the sukkah, and I saw that the walls didn't match what we're about to say. The Gemara says in Furish, there's the next point. We're talking about wall canvas walls. Mechitza she'ena omedes peruach metzuya is not a mechitza. Machlokas had to understand that. Let's give you the kula of the Chazon Ish, is that as long as it, even if it moves a little bit, if it moves less than three tvachim back and forth, you're still okay. The problem was that pizza place is sukkah in a certain very Jewish area of town where everyone's very makpid on halacha, who else would be taking the kids to Uncle Moshe? Come on. So, there, the walls, based on the way I moved the walls, it seemed like they did move more than three tvachim back and forth, and therefore I did not have pizza with my kids. What do you do if you have such a sukkah? Then, of course, you put strings up, loved one to the other from the floor, 2.9 tvachim, another one 2.9 above that, another 2.9 above that. You have three or four strings, you will now have a wall made out of loved horizontal strings, one, another, And then you have a halakhic wall if you want to make it nice and make it look good and make it feel warm and not windy, so put canvas around that. However, based on what we said about Taz, Tevel, Amin, HaAsui, those strings have to be up first before you put up the schach. So you can't build your canvas sukkah that shakes in the wind, put on the schach, and then say, oh, let's be machmir to make, not mayrach, let's be halakhic and make sure that the wind, the things don't move and put up these strings, because that will be Taz, Tevel, Amin, HaAsui, you already have your schach, then you're making the halakhic mechitza. That will be a problem. Okay, that will be all we'll do for Sukkah. Let's go to the next shul. Dalad Minim.
Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh B'dvarav.
The number one psil to talk about is Murkav. Why? Because if it's Murkav, it might not be an Esrog. Right? That's what the Magen Avraham says. Levush doesn't say that. Levush says, that is a beautiful idea if you think about it. It's a good thing to give a drasha on. Levush says, how do you make a Murkav? By being Markav. You're not allowed to be Markav. So Levush says, it's a mitzvah, Habba Aveira, to, you're not allowed to do Harkava. So therefore, if you have the result of the Harkava or Murkav, it's mitzvah, Habba Aveira. However, there was, I never heard it to Rabbi Konigsberg, he said, the Saba Kaddish Alefandri, of course, so Chutay again, Aleinu, Amen, says that any citrus fruit, even a lemon, would be kosher, and therefore, Mokav, I guess, is kosher, according to the Saba Kaddish Alefandri. I don't know the details, look it up before you rely on it. I mean, don't rely on it. Of course, the Gemara tells us, I don't remember the Gemara, the Mishnah Berurah, there are four simanim to assure that an esrog is not a Murkav. It has A, blitos. B, it has an ukatz shakua, the bottom thing is indented inside. Thirdly, klipa is ava. And fourthly, the seeds are vertical, whereas in a lemon, the seeds are horizontal. The Chasam Sofer says, you can't just rely on these to be so many, oh, I have these simanim, so therefore it must be not a murkav, you have to actually know the paradis. However, the badatz, even though the badatz is usually very machmer on things here, the badatz has a kula, that's why all the estrogim all have an extra badatz, because it's the biggest kula in the industry. It's hard not to be samechan at that. The badatz is machshir based on siman, and they check samples, and the only way to check a sample is by cutting it open. There's a big expert on Dal Mina next door, Rabbi Reichman, not related to this Rabbi Reichman, and Rabbi Reichman had a whole shita where he suggests that you could take your esrog, buy your esrog for yontif, cut it in half, and then he had glue it together afterwards. He had a way that you could somehow like check your own esrog, not just check the paradis and check the seeds, are they vertical or not, or horizontal. But you can actually check your esrog. I think it's brought down in the sukkah, in the book, Dalad Minim, the first one. Kehilchasan? The first one, the green book. The book that came out before all the other modern picture books. The one that's been around for 20, 30 years. Fine. Let's talk about some psuli, Dalad Minim. Let's talk about, before we talk about any psulim, let's just get one thing clear that might have been a little bit confusing during the shir. There are two potential psulim when we talk about certainly esrog and even the other dalad minim as well. There's a psul called chaser. There's a psul called hadar. What does the psul chaser derive from? Lekachtem by lechem by yom harishon. Lekachtem lekicha tam. It has to be a perfect lekicha, a complete lekicha, and therefore the psul of chaser is when lekachtem lechem by yom harishon. So the psul chaser is only on the first day. There's a different halacha called hadar. Hadar, there's a machlokas whether it's pasul only on the first day or it's pasul all 7 days. Tosfos says that hadar is pasul all 7 days because hadar is the definition of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is priyat hadar. So if it's not hadar, you don't have the mitzvah. So therefore, since it's something that's so integral to the mitzvah, when we do the takana d'rabbanan of dal minim kol shiva, which is only a din d'rabbanan of main d'oraisa of what was in the mikdash. We're going to do it for that part of the mitzvah, the chelik of the essential mitzvah of hadar, which is me'ein the mitzvah itself. However, the Rambam understands otherwise. The Rambam understands that hadar is only pasul on the first day because he understands that hadar is not part of the essential. What is the mitzvah? It's just a din. The way you have to do it is a hadar dik away, and we're not going to say kol d'tikun d'rabbanan tikein d'oraisa tikun. If you didn't get that point, leave it aside, vital, which is an added depth. Let's talk about your pitum falls off. So the first thing we learn when we're in kindergarten is make sure you don't touch the abbas Esther because the pitta might fall off, but for those of us who are lamdanim like us in this room, we know it's not so chomer, it's not so simple, because of the following. There are different parts of the pitta, and there's a shoshan, the little ball on top, there's the stem, and if the shoshanta, nitla shoshanta, the little ball on top falls off, it is kosher, according to most Rishonim, so much so that the Mishnah Berurah says that if you have two esrogim, and yours is more mehudar, one is more mehudar, except the shoshanta, the little ball on top fell off, it's better to use the more mehudar one with the little ball on top of the shoshanta that fell off, better to use that than a less mehudar esrog with a complete pitam and shoshanta intact. However, if the stem itself under the shoshanta falls off, there it's puzzle. How much has to fall off? That's machlokus, whether it has to a little bit fall off or it has to completely fall off, that there's a dent, a hole on the top of the esrog. So if once you get into the, if the little tip of it, the top ball falls off, go ahead, use it, because it's a hate if it's nice. If it, once you're getting into the realm of a little bit of your stem, a little bit of the vertical piece of wood, that already gets into, that already you should avoid. Even if it is mehudar, don't use that one. But based on what we said earlier, let's say the whole thing falls off. The whole pitam falls off. So can I use it on the 2nd through 7th day? Here we have a machlokas, whether the psul of nitla pitmasa is a psul of chaser, or is it a psul of hadar? And the Mishnah Berurah says that we could apply svek sveka. What's the sex sake? If the psul is chaser is only possible on the first day, so I can use it the rest of the 7 days. But maybe the psul is hadar, which according to Tosas is possible all 7 days. Yeah, but even if it's hadar, you could still rely on the opinion of the Rambam in hadar that holds that hadar is only psul on the first day. And that's the sex sake of the Mishnah Berurah. Let me repeat the sex sake, please. The sex sake of the Mishnah Berurah is, and we're going to see this by the problem of Nitla Pitmasa, so we might see it once or twice in the next few minutes again. If the psul is chaser, I could use it on the last 6 days of Yom Tov, because chaser is the only problem on the first day. And if the psul is hadar, which is all 7 days, still I could be someich on the Rambam who says that hadar is only possible on the first day. That's why halacha l'maaseh, even if you're miserable, wretched, little kindergarten kid, broke off, bit off your pitam, on the second day, there's nothing to worry about. Well, let's not talk about the second day, because that's a question if Yom Tov Sheni might be like first day. Once you get to the third day, you're definitely good to go. That's the end of Nitla Pitmasa. Now let's talk about Shinui Marech. There are three Shinui Marehs. One is Chazazis, that's just a growth. It's usually greenish, but it's a growth that looks like a bubble, a pimple. There's Blechlech, which are scabs that were caused by thorns and grown over. And there's green, which the Gemara says is possible. We're only going to talk right now about the first two. Chazazis, the Gemara talks about this growth of a chazazis. The Gemara says if it's miuto, it's kosher. But if it's rubo, it's pasul. Within that which we say miuto is kosher, if there are two or three places, then it's going to be pasul because that's not just that it's discolored, but that's considered it's a spotted esrog. It's an esrog menumer, like a leopard. It has spots. And that itself is going to be a problem. Even if it's miuto, if it's two, in different three, two or three places. The Rosh Havis says, not just by pimples, by chazaz, but even by white spots and black spots, if you have those two or three spots, two or three black spots, usually more black than white, you have two or three spots, and those two or three spots, if you would draw a circle around, encircling those two or three dots, wherever they're configured on your essay, you draw a circle, whatever, a funny shape circle, around that area, if that area will enclose the majority of either the surface area of the esrog or the circumference of the esrog, then those two or three marks will render the esrog pasul. That's all talking about not the chotem. Once you get to the chotem, then a shinimara chazazis is posel even b'mashu, and therefore black dot on the chotem will be posel even b'mashu. What is the chotem? Here we have a machlok, it's about 4 or 5 sheets in the Rishonim. Lemaisa, we follow the Chasam Sofer. I'm sorry, the Chasam Sofer says that we follow the Rush, that once you get to the point where the esrog starts sloping upwards, which is usually about the top, you know, top 25% to the top 55%, you know, depending on how your esrog is built, basically the top third or usually, or half, then that's already the chotem. If there's a black dot there, one black dot, it's going to be pasul. However, it's only the Magen Avraham says if it's nira la'ayin. You don't need a, you don't have to use a, this mashu is a pasul, only if it's nira la'ayin. That is the halacha of Chazazis and that aspect of Shini Mareh. Next one, and this I think is very important because now that I'm thinking about it, as I prepared for this Chazar Shu, I think that this is my esrik. I had a bletzel, it was a beautiful Chazanish esrik, and it was very beautiful, except one bletzel, which happened to be towards the top. So what's the deal with bletzel? So here, I guess I'll have to be more careful next year, even though my mother always tells me that when you have to take care of children, you have learning to do, so why are you worried so much about this mitzvah and about other mitzvahs? So always a hard thing to balance. The answer is, if you really care about your mitzvah, just spend a little bit more money. You'll find things much more quickly. It'll save you a lot of time. But okay, something to think about. We should all be zocha to have beautiful esrogim next year. So what is a blatzel? Blatzel is a scab, but caused by the thorn that punctured it, and then it just grew over itself. If you ever got a cut on your knee, the same thing happens. The Maril says, let's rephrase that. Let's start with the Trumas Hadashim, because it works better for me this past Sukkot. The Trumas Hadashim says, blatzel, all esrogim get blatlach. This is part of the natural process. It's the Mara Esrog. There's no problem. And even if you have a blatzel on the rove, I don't know how you'd have that, a really bad scratch, or you have a bletzel on the chotam, that's kosher. And Baruch Hashem, my estrig, which had that, I think, on the chotam, that's the Ramah, does pass like this, Chumas Hadash, and Mikra Hadin, my estrig was fine, according to Chumas Hadash and the Ramah. However, Maharil says that a bletzel, even though it sort of happens as they grow, and on the tree, it's not a Mara Estrog, says the Maharil. A bletzel is just like a chazazis that we talked about 3 minutes ago. And therefore, we'll have the same psulim, that if it's a blatz in the large part, it will be pasul, the larger part of the esrog. Or if it's even a mashu on the chotam, which was my esrog, that'll be a problem. So according to the Maharil, a blatz is considered a shini mara, and on the chotam, it would be pasul b'mashu. According to that Maharil, it sounds like my esrog would not have followed this Maharil. Baruch Hashem, at least Ramah, we are make like the Trumas Hadashim. Okay, so that's all for our Shini Mara. Let's talk about... Okay, we'll skip. You shouldn't skip, but for right now we won't talk about Lulu, just because we don't have so much time right now. We're not going to talk about Lulu, because I just don't have time right now to talk about Lulu, but go over Lulu in your notes. One point, only because it's so halach or maisa, knepples. Knepples are... It sounds like it's a little like nuggy, you know, when you're... Okay. Knepples happen all the time, and I think a lot of people buy lulavim with knepple when they don't know so much, and we'll see what the issue is. Knepple is with the leaves on top of the very, very, very tippy top of the tiumsin are bent backwards. So on one hand, that's a little bit nicer, because usually when there's a knepple, it pulls them together, it pulls the top leaves together, so you know that there's no problem nechlekat tiyomes. However, the Ran is machmir that knepel is considered a problem of kafuf. If the whole lulav is kafuf, is bent over backwards, that's pasul. The Rosh said that if it's just in the leaves, not the whole body, not the whole shadra, just in the leaves, that's kosher, and it's even nicer because it didn't separate. But the Ran says that kafuf is not just the whole if the whole lulav is bent backwards, but even if just the leaves, the alim themselves are bent backwards, and now mamash be pasul, according to the Ran. So it ends up being funny. According to the Rosh, it's better, because it assures you that the leaves are together, that you don't have nechukat yomes. According to the Ran, it's pasul. I just wanted to talk about that, because that's very, very exceedingly common. Okay, let's start talking about mikvahs. Mikvahs is a double shear. I'm going to pick 7 points from mikvahs. I don't plan on... Should there be a diagram? Who wants a diagram? Okay, we'll see. I'm not going to draw it, but I'm asking who wants to draw a diagram on the test. No, not now. I'm saying on the test.
Oh,
no. I want to draw a diagram. Okay.
No.
I'm not sure how to react.
Is that what Nochum is doing? Because he went to the hospital. He's going through acid at his face.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently he's quite a controversial figure.
He's in the hospital.
Oh, yeah. Show me that. Okay. Baruch Hashem, we should all be zocha to say that I built 200, I built 76 mikvahs in the Ukraine. Or whatever, so we should be zocha. Okay, so if what is a mikvah? A mikvah is a mikvah, and a mayan is a mayan, and the pasuk talks about both. Ach mayanu bar, mikvah mayim, so we have a mayan and we have a bar. What's the difference between them? There are two differences between a mikvah and a mayan, a spring. A mikvah is mitar only by ashborim, still water, and a mayan is mitar not only by ashborim, but even by zocholin, even flowing. The second distinction between a mayan and a mikvah is that a mikvah needs 40 sa'ah, and a mayan is mitar afil b'mashu. Certainly, by kelim, by adam, there's machlokas rishonim if you need a mayan is mitar b'kolshu or not. As long as something fits into a mayan, it's mitar. So we have two points that are distinctive between, that distinguish between a mikvah and a mayan. Says the Gra, these two halachas are habahatalia as follows. We have to know one bit of information. Without one bit of information, we can analyze these two points of distinction. The bit of information is katafris and a chibur. If there's water flowing on an incline, the halacha is that that is not considered connected. The water above, look at my hands, please. The water is flowing down. So the water here that's flowing and the water here, halachically, is not considered connected. So therefore, as follows. If you have a mikvah, let's start the other way. If you have a mayan, a mayan is flowing water. So since it's flowing, and we just said that katafris, you know, diagonally flowing water, something that's on a diagonal, is not considered mechubra one with another, is not connected, so every mayan, each part of the mayan, each unit within the mayan, which is in the flow of the spring water that's flowing down the mountain, is disconnected from the other part of it, because it's part of a katafris, part of a rolling diagonal. And therefore, it's not mechubur one to the other. So how can a mayan ever be matayr? You have the saw here is not connected to the saw downhill, which is not connected to the saw downhill. It must be that a mayan does not have a shear. And that's why you can have one little piece over here. It's disconnected from the others, but that's okay. You could be matayr in just this piece, or this piece, or this piece. And they don't have to add up to be 140 saw mayan. However, a mikvah, which is not moving anywhere, it's not on a katafris, it's not on an incline, it's all together. So there, nothing is, it's all connected. Since it's all connected, let me rephrase it, a mikvah that needs to be, a nikvah that needs to have, that has a shear, the Torah said is just shear for a mikvah, it can't be flowing, because if it would be flowing, that would lose katafris and a chibra, the incline is not a connection between different parts, and that would be puzzle. Let me try to say that again. If you work out the math, you'll see it works. How about Talia? Again, a mayan must be kosher b'mashu, because otherwise you will never have a shear, because the two parts of it will never connect. As opposed to a mikvah, which has a shear, you have to say that it must be gathered together in one place. It must be still water, not flowing water, because if it was flowing water, you wouldn't have the shear. That's the Gra putting together these two points of distinction. That's point number one about mikvahs. Next point. Very important point, and that's the issue of rivers. Are rivers kosher or are rivers not kosher? So the Gemara talks about this, and the Gemara says that it depends on what time of the year. Any of you who have been to the mountains know that it rains on the mountains, and then all spring long into the summer, you have the water that's flowing based on what melted off the snow of the mountains. So if it's during that time of the year, what's most of the water that in the river? That's rainwater. Rainwater, we just said, has to be still. It can't be flowing. It can't be zochalim. So it would be possible to go to a river in the spring. However, if you go in the fall, what water is there? All the water that was from rainwater that fell or melted in the snow, that's all gone. The only water that you see running in the fall is all spring water. Well, spring water is kosher if it's flowing. And that's what the Gemara says, that during the season that the rivers are carrying rainwater must be bash boran, must be still, and it will be possible zochlin. You cannot be tovel in a river during the spring. However, during the fall, when all the water is that flowing, the rainwater is gone, it's all flow. It's all Mayan water. It's all spring water. Spring water is a lot of flow, and therefore a river, which is flowing, and if it's from all the water that's here, it must be from a spring, that will be kosher. That's what the Gemara tells us. Except for one person. Shmuel says, for whatever reason, we're not going to go into Lundus because I don't understand it. Shmuel says that rivers are always kosher. Rivers are always kosher. So how do we paskin? The Shulchan Aruch is machmir, not like Shmuel. And the Shulchan Aruch says that it depends on what time of the year are you going to the mikvah. Are you going to the blank? I don't want to call it a mikvah. What time of the year are you going to the river? If you're going during rain, when there's a lot of rainwater there, when the majority is rainwater, you're in trouble. Because rainwater must be ashbor, it must be still. But if you're going when it's Mayan time, when most of the water is not from rainwater but from the springs that are flowing, that is kosher bezelcha, is kosher with flowing water, and you're fine. So Shulchan Aruch says is a big chumrah, because that means that half of the year, people who don't have a mikvah but they go in the river cannot go to the mikvah. Baruch Hashem, we have the Ramah who cites a Yesh Mekilin who says that if there are no mikvahs around, we can rely on that other opinion in the Gemara, the opinion of Shmuel, who says that you can always use a river for whatever reason he says it. Very important to know, every community has a few svarim there, right? So if there's svarim, they usually have to follow the Shulchan Aruch, don't they? And the Shulchan Aruch says it depends on the season. That means during half the year when there's a lot of rainwater, they're not going to be able to go to these rivers. If there's no mikvah, they're in big trouble. So Rav Avdi Yosef says, comes out with a great clue. It says the kula that the Ramah cited was the Maharik. Maharik himself was a Sephardi. So therefore, even Sephardim could be maker like the kula of the Maharik. And again, when there are no mikvahs around, b'shas hatzorach, they will be able, b'shas hatzorach, I think the word was, b'shas hatzorach, they can, even Sephardim can rely on this Maharik and can go to a river all the time, b'shas hatzorach. So Allah l'maisa, everybody, b'shas hatzorach, can go to a river at any time of the year. L'chatchila, it would depend on what time of the year it would be. That's the second point. Third point, we said that flowing water is possible by a mikvah. Mikvah has to be still water, S-T-I-L-L. In Hebrew, ashbarim. How still does it have to be? I mean, if there's a tiny, tiny, tiny leak, will that disqualify mikvah? Mikvah has some tiny leaks, some microscopic leaks. So the Rashba says that there's a psil of zochel in a flowing water out of a still mikvah, only if it's a zechila hanikeres. That makes life, that helps us out a lot. The problem is that the gra on Shulchan Aruch is machmir, that even if it's a zechila she'ena nikeres, it's possible mide oraisa. So this gra against the Rashba makes life a little bit challenging, and we have to make ourselves very certain that the mikveh is not losing water to slow seepages. Next point, point number four in mikvahs. There's a halacha, there are two halachas. One is that a mikveh cannot be in a kli. You can't go to a mikveh in a kli. There's a second halacha, which sounds like it's related, but doesn't have to be, that the mikveh has to be mechuber lakarka. So let's say you want to go to the mikveh in a garbage can that's full of rainwater. So rainwater is great, right? And it's not going anywhere. There are no holes in the bottom of the garbage can. That will still be I think it's Pasal Derabanan, if I remember correctly, because it's a gzera that, I think it's Pasal Derabanan, you're going in a kli. I don't remember. What's the gzera? Oh, no, the steps then. Okay, on the steps, that's a gzera out to the kli. Okay, fine, thank you. Okay, either way, it's possible to go in the garbage can, even though it's rainwater. But separate and independent from there is that it has to be mechuber lakarka, and therefore, apparently, in terms of governmental building codes, you're going to have an issue, because sometimes when they mandate, when you build a pool and you get your government assurance, your government light, what's the word?
Light.
Yeah, you get the CFO, what's it called? The CO, Certificate of Occupancy, COO for your pool, your COS, I guess, Certificate of Swimming. For your pool, the government's going to come down, and a lot of times they want to make sure there are going to be barriers, like basically sheets of plastic between the pool and the bottom of the ground, so that groundwater, which is often contaminated, won't come up. So that's what the government wants. For us, that's going to cause a gigantic problem, because that's going to make our mikvahs not mechuber lakarka. Serious problem. How to fix it? Discuss it with your local Orthodox bonei mikvahs. The next point is exceedingly important. We're going to talk about how to how to build our mikdos. We're going to talk about Ashaka and Zriya and the problems with each and the advantages of each. Okay, so I have a hole that got filled with water from rain, so my people could go take a swim in that, and everything is wonderful. Problem is, it gets dirty, and people will be less happy to go into it. So we want to figure out a way to have a supply of rainwater. On the other hand, to have clean water. If I always empty out the rainwater, I'm great when it rains a lot, but I'm going to be in trouble for a good part of the year, or in certain locations for more than a part of a year. How will I have my rainwater? So we have Hashaka and we have Zriya. What's Hashaka? Hashaka is kissing. Zriya is planting. Hashaka, which is kissing, I have a bore over here full of rainwater, and I have a bore over here full of tap water, and I let them kiss. I open up a hole between them, Kishvaferes Hanod, which is, as apparently the Chazan just said, 2 inches in diameter. And that kiss between the two of them will be machshir, the rainwater will be machshir, the bor of sheuven water, which is pasal, that it will now kiss. Now, where do we put our rainwater? We keep it in the rainwater bor. Where do we put our people? We put them in the tap water bor. When does the kiss have to be happening while people are in the bor? Or once I just have to let the waters kiss, let the hashaka happen, and I can plug up the hole, and I have already been machshir the bor of tap water. So here, the Shulchan Aruch is Mako. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says, once you connected them, you let the two bodies of water kiss once, the tap water was hukshar, and you can dip in the tap water even after it's plugged up. However, the Bach is machmir lechatchila, that the nekev has to be open during, the nekev has to be open during tvila. The nekev between the bor tvila and the bor geshem, mei geshem. That's hashaka. Zriya is your planting. In other words, instead of having two bors, one next to another, and opening up so they could kiss one another, you're going to plant, you're going to take your hose, you're going to take your faucet, and plant a lot of water into the mei geshemim, and then it will roll over into a next door bor, or an adjacent bor, or through a tube into somewhere else, and that's how you're going to fill up your second bor. And since it was planted, the water is coming, look at my hands, where it comes in from your hose and from the faucet into the kosher mei geshemim, it's going to either overflow or go wherever it will go, and fill up whatever adjacent bor is, so all the water is now huksha. The water from the tap is huksha by traveling through this mei geshemim. There are two problems with Zriya. Because what happens when you do Zriya? What we just described. You're pouring into the mei geshemim, it's going to go into the next bor. The next bor, what did we do there? It was used yesterday, the water got dirty, we suctioned out all the water, now it's empty. Now that it's empty and clean, so we're going to put clean water in. I'm going to put the new water, going to go into the mei geshemim, and come into this, and fill it up again anew. What happens when you fill it up again anew? There's a halacha that if you have gimel lugin b'tchila, if you have a little bit of water there, how much is the log? Well, revius for Kiddush is a revius halog. So therefore, if a revius for Kiddush is 3.5 ounces, what's 4 times that? 3.5 by 2 is 7. 14 ounces. So 3 lugan is 14 times 3 is about 42. Something like that. You might have 42 ounces that is accumulated somewhere in that bor. And if those are there before your new kosher mikvah water enter, the whole mikvah is pasul. In fact, we're machmir not only to have not have 3 lugan, we're machmir even to have a revius, 3.5 ounces of water anywhere between the tiles of that empty bor. That's there, but before I put my new water in, I'm going to be in trouble. So if my suction was not 1,000% perfect, it might even have a tiny bit of just a revius there, all the water that I'm going to put in now is not going to create a kosher mikvah. That's problem one with Zriya. Problem two with Zriya is the following, and this is easily solved. Problem two with Zriya is that we said that a mikvah has a psul, a mikvah has to be still water, and it can't be flowing. If I turn a hose and I plant it, I pour it directly into my bor geshamim, it's going to flow in, and then if it flows directly into the next one, how is this water becoming hukshar? By flowing straight into here and flowing straight out into the bor, into the empty bor. That is going to be creating a mikvah, which is not supposed to be flowing, supposed to be still, through a zechila. And therefore, we want to avoid that. So what we try to do is we pour all of our water. The solution to the second problem is we will pour our tap or our hose into the mei geshamim, and the Mei Geshamim is closed. It's now going to get higher. I have a lot of water there. And it now got a Hechsher. It was Hechsher. All the tap water was Hechsher. And then afterwards, I'll open up separately with a separate step. I'll now open the plug and let all that kosher water that is no longer considered tap water halachically, it's all been Hechsher by the Zriya, let it flow into the second bar. Meaning I do it in two steps, not in one step, that it flows straight from the hose down into the first bar and then into the second bar. I break it up into two steps. So those are two advantages of Zriya. Those are two problems with Zriya. What's the problem with Hashaka? The problem with Hashaka is that we want to make sure the two boros, I have two boros filled with water, I have to make sure they kiss. What happens if you forgot to kiss them, to open up the plug? Or if we want to be machmir, to have the plug open while the people are tovel there, what happens if you forgot to have the plug open? Fine.
Here, right?
Yeah. Okay, because it's an important point, I know we're spending a lot of time mikvahs, but it's a very important point, and we'll do it even though this is a harder issue than some of the others. There is a halacha called Nasan Sa'ah V'Natal Sa'ah. What that means is that if I have Mei Geshamim that I continually dilute with tap water, if you do it enough times, you're going to end up that the 40 sav Mei Geshamim that you started with have been diluted so many times, how much real Mei Geshamim that came from rain are you going to be left with 3 years later? It was poured into so many times, it was let it connected to other waters so many times. So, Mei Hadin, that's okay, because as long as I start with a bar of Mei Geshamim, I could do whatever I want. I could pour water into it and let it flow out. I could let it intermingle with other waters through Hashaka next to it. That's all okay, Midoraisa. That's all okay, Midorabanan, except for the Rambam and the Raisin. The Rambam and the Raisin hold that we have a concern called Nasan Sa Venato Sa. If I take out a Sa and put in a Sa, I have to be able to still maintain at least a rove of the original waters, of the kosher waters. So we have right now one value that I just presented, that we want to maintain a Mei Geshamim that is intact, that has its integrity maintained, and we don't lose it. On the other hand, if we always have this dirty, stinky, stagnant water around, it's going to get dirtier and stinkier and more stagnant. And people aren't going to want to go swimming in it. So we want to have it connected and unplug and flow with all the other boros. So there's going to be a lot of mixing between my boros, because I want to have clean water for the people to swim in, and I want it all to still be connected to this original Mei Geshamim, and there's going to be so much flowing of the water between them, intermingling, I might lose my original, at least rove of 40 sub Mei Geshem. So the solution was, Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rishab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the institution of Bar Al-Gabe Bar. What's the institution of Bar Al-Gabe Bar? Have rainwater on the bottom. Rainwater is cold, you keep it cold, and cold water is denser than warmed water, where the molecules are jumping around more quickly and therefore running around and take up more space and less dense. So therefore, cold rainwater will stay cold on the bottom and stay there. On top of that bar, you have a hole. And on the bar on top of that, the hole is open, kishafes, I know there's a hashaka between the two baros. The hole on top of that will be your heated warm water. The heated warm water is going to stay on the top. The cold Mei Geshamim is going to stay on the bottom. But yet they're connected through this hole in the middle, through this hashak in the middle, and I will have always a connection to Mei Geshamim. The Mei Geshamim will retain its integrity as Mei Geshamim because it's colder and more dense and will stay on the bottom, and I will be safe. The problem that the Divrei Chaim, this Heilige Sanz Rebbe, asked is that we said earlier, if you remember 20 minutes ago, we said that there's a slant. If there's an incline, water on an incline is not connected one to another. And therefore, if I have hashaka, if I have the kissing between two boros side by side, there's a hashaka, there's a connection. But if it's going to be a vertical connection, one on top of the other, that would go under the problem of, that would be considered a problem of nitzak erachibur. That's something on an incline with a vertical component, is not considered mechuber one with the other. And therefore, the top bar is open to the bottom bar, but halachically, they're not connected. So, you're going swimming, you're going to the mikvah in a comfortable bath of warm water that is not connected halachically because mitzvah kein achibur, vertical connection is not considered a chibur to the megisham on the bottom. That's the Divrei Chaim's rejection, the Sanzer Rebbe's rejection of the Rebbe Rishab's mikvah. We have two answers. Answer number one is perhaps the only time that we say that water on an incline, water with a vertical component, is not connected one part to the other part, is when it's flowing. So as it's flowing, as there's a flow diagonally down a hill, for example, the water on the bottom of the hill of the flow is halakhically disconnected from the water on top of the hill. But here, with the Rebbe Rishab's mikvah, bor gal bebor, the top waters and then bottom waters are not flowing anywhere. They're just sitting there, one on top of the other. That will not be a problem of katafris en ochibur. The second answer is not an answer, but it's just a structural solution. Have your bor gal bebor. To solve the problem of always having your megishama that's maintained and that it has the integrity of megishama that's not being lost. But you know, you could also have simultaneously, to make the Divrei Chaim happy, have another bar hashaka on the right or to the left, on the side of the bar tevila, and that will be a vertical hashaka, which is definitely a good hashaka. It's not a katafris. It's not on an incline. It's a vertical hashaka. A horizontal hashaka. I don't know if I said what I said. If it will be a horizontal hashaka, it will be kosher, and that will be good according to Divrei Chaim. And the bor al gabi bor will solve the problem, will make the Rebbe Rishab happy. Those are two solutions to the Divrei Chaim's question of the Rebbe Rishab. Let's go to the next. Again, look at your notes for the rest of... actually, there's only one more topic in Mikvah, so you could look right down the word Hamshacha, look up what Hamshacha is and why Hamshacha is so important when it comes to building a Mikvah. Next shir is the Halachas of Kiruv, organized very neatly by Rabbi Becher. There are nine potential sources that Rabbi Becher compiled in his Sefer Avosos Ahava and in the shir that he gave us as to what the source for the mitzvah of Kiruv Rechokim ought to be. Or as my father, who's a professor of Hebrew, likes to tell me, it's not Kiruv, it's Keruv. So next time you see something that says Kiruv, write them a letter. And those of you who know FNUJ, there's a very famous takeout place that advertised Shalom Bayis gefilte fish. No, Shalom Bayis kugel. It's a kugel that's half potato, half noodle, or a gefilte fish that's half this and half that. My father, who's friendly with the owner there, said, there's no such word as Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis. It's connected. Shalom Bayis. So, reference to my father, I'll say now it should be Kerev, but I might have written Kerev a few times in my notes. You'll at least Modar Rabba La Raisa. Okay, what are the nine sources for Keruv? First of all, Ahavta Es Hashem. Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem. And as we know, if you really love somebody, you don't eat them. You want everyone else to love them. So the Rambam says, the Sefri says, Ahavei Ol Habrios, make everyone love Hashem. Second mitzvah is the mitzvah Tochacha. Ochech Tochech Es HaMisecha. Mitzvah Daraisev Tochacha. But wait a second. Ochech Tochech Es Amisacha. That means somebody else is from. So where do we get to do tocha to somebody who is not yet? So there, the different mefarshim say that there might be a difference. Amisacha might include somebody who's not from, as long as they're not a mumra lahachis. Third source for the mitzvah of Kerev is Hashavas Aveda. What does that have to do with? I lost my watch. What does that have to do with bringing somebody to tshuva? Because the Gemara talks about Hashavas Aveda applying also to Hashavas Gufo, as we know about saving somebody's life. And the Maram Shik extends that Kal V'chomer. If Hashavas Gufo has to be returned Kal V'chomer, Hashava of his Neshama, of his Nefesh. The fourth source is Chesed. Mitzvah the rice of Chesed, and the greatest Chesed, if you look at Archas Tzadikim, he says there are a number of kinds of Chesed. This was not from the Shir. Of Archas, I think it says it's Chesed that a person could do with his money, it's Chesed on a higher level a person could do with his body, and the highest chesed is the chesed Avraham Avinu did to all the people who he impacted, is the chesed he could do with your wisdom. Sharing wisdom with somebody is the highest level of chesed. Next source, V'ahavt Recha Kamocha. The Ramban says, again, the Knesh is in the Ramban. V'ahavt Recha Kamocha, the Ramban says that I should want my friend to have everything that I have, and adds the Ramban even in Chachma, which is parenthetically, the opposite of lasachmod. I don't want somebody else to have something. I want what he has. No, I want, after Yechon Kolach means, I want he should have everything that I have, including Chachma. Number six, Arur Asher Lo Yakim Es HaSefer HaTorah HaZos. Based on this, I'm very careful. I don't remember if it's Ramban. Ramban says, make sure you don't refuse to do Hagba. So even though Shulchan Aruch says, whenever somebody gives you an aliyah, you should refuse a few times, I'm terrified to refuse if anyone offers me Hagba, because I'll get an Arur of Arur Asher Lo Yakim Es HaSefer HaTorah HaZos. That has nothing to do with this, just important to know. But here, Asher Lo Yakim Es HaSefer HaTorah HaZos, Yushalmi says, somebody who does not make him Torah for other people is in the Arur. Seven, the chiyuv of, it's not a chiyuv, it's just a mitzias of arvus, which has the both on the positive impact and the negative impact of the kashlu ish bavon achiv. And this, of course, is the source for the din that I could be motzi another Jew in Kiddush, and as the Ram says so beautifully, the Ritva says so beautifully, that I was not yet mekayim my mitzvah of shofar until every last Jew was mekayim their mitzvah of shofar based on arvus. So by the way, if you take that logic, you could say that there's a din prati in any single mitzvah of keruv for that mitzvah. Meaning, I was not mekayim. What's mekayim of you to do keruv in Hilchas Tefillin? The mitzvah of Tefillin, because you were mekayim your mitzvah of Tefillin until you made sure that every person fulfilled their mitzvah. That's just my own addition, something to think about. Shulchan Aruch Haraz points something very important. We know there's a mitzvah of Tochacha, but he says it's not just to be metaking somebody else, to rebuke them so that they start doing mitzvahs properly or better or at all, but it's also by you being moche, by you making a tochacha, making a protest that I'm unhappy with what you did, that absolves you from the otherwise obligation you would have on yourself of arvus. Number eight, v'yata harami kibecha, which by the way the Gemara understands that's the mitzvah for Beis Din to kill those who are chiyavim by Beis Din, but Rabbeinu Yonah understands it to be getting rid of all the evil and stuff that evil people do, help people do mitzvahs. And finally, Kiddush Hashem. What is Kiddush Hashem? The Rambam says the first name Hashem and his mitzvahs. That's the first section of this shiur. Next section, what is the status of a non-religious person? Presumably, the Gemara in Erevin tells us that Mechal Shas B'Farhesia is a mumar, is Kilo Aved Avodah Zara. He's practically Ois Yud, which has significant halachic nafkaminas in a lot of areas. But let's not jump so quickly, because not every Mechal Shabbos Yom B'Farhesia is a guy, because we have to define Farhesia. Let's go to three mitigations of this psula of Mechal Shabbos Farhesia. Firstly, Gemara Ervin says, Mechal Shabbos Farhesia is only if he's going to do it in front of an Adam Gadol. Similarly, some say Farhesia is only in front of 10 Shomri Mitzvos. So if you have a guy out in Kentucky who has never saw 10 Shomri Mitzvos, he can't possibly be Mechal Shabbos B'Farhesia, even though he drives to and from his temple every Saturday morning in his bright red top-down Ford Mustang. Second mitigation for a Mechal Shabbos Farhesia is only if he's a mazin. And Chazon says, you know what mazin means? Mazin means he doesn't know the onesh is a chiyuv kares. So if a guy never went to day school and didn't know that being Mechal Shabbos is a chiyuv kares, then even though he knows that he can't do this and all the rabbis told him this, he just never knew that it was a chiyuv kares, that's not considered mazin. Thirdly, Tosfos Chulin writes that Mechal Shabbos Farhesia is only if he's ragil. It's true, the Shach is machmer, that even if somebody was Mechal Shabbos Farhesia only one time, constitutes a Mechal Shabbos Farhesia, but you have Tosfos to be Samechan. So Halach HaMais, based on all these factors, comes the very famous Shabbos Truth of the Binyan Sion, and he says, Rov HaPoshim Bizmanenu are not Mumrim, and based on that, Rodotzi Hoffman, I assume, in the Melamed Lehoil, which he wrote, I assume that's where it is, but I don't remember. I don't know. I don't have my notes. He says, based on Binyan Sion, you can be mitzayif and mechal Shabbos to a minion, which, if you live out of town, is very nogeh halach l'maisa. There's a shayla that we had in our shul. We had a fellow who used to come in to shul with his earphones and his, definitely didn't dress Shabbosik, but that's one issue. That's mishkeferlach. But he came into shul with his earphones, and he kept on coming over to me and said, Rabbi, I want an aliyah. And so first we gave him Galilah. Then he came down coming to me, you know, Rabbi, I want my Aliyah. He grew up conservative. He was a little bit different personality-wise, a little bit perhaps on the spectrum, but he really wanted an Aliyah, and he really, you know, he came at one point for quite a few Shabbos, one after the other, and he came and he sat quietly. And he told me a little bit about his story. From, he grew up in a conservative temple, and he had his aliyah, his bar mitzvah. My name is so-and-so, my name is so-and-so, he kept telling me his Hebrew name. So I spoke to Shechta, based on the Sikhus Moshe, was Mekel, that if he believes in Hashem, he wants an aliyah. That means he believes in it. If he believes in it, and he wants it, that shows, at least in this regard, he is, he's a Mechal Shabbos. He's wearing, he told me he came by bus, and he comes into shul wearing his earphones. Looked a little different. We told him not to take off the earphones, but it was clear that he was Mechal Shabbos before Hesia. But still, he believed in the brachas, he believed in the Torah, he believed in Hashem, and therefore his bracha is a bracha, and the Igros Moshe is Mekel, I believe, to give him an aliyah. Is that Igros Moshe? Is it regarding aliyah or Tzir Flaminion? Thank you very much. Yes, to give an aliyah. Baruch Hashem, thank you. Thank you very much. Archaim Chalkavas Shuvachav Tess. What about, I had this Shaila yesterday, except it was very convenient, one of my old students, who is unfortunately not religious right now, came to say hello, and Baruch Hashem, I didn't have to offer him food because he had brought some food with him, and he offered me some, but it was fruit, so kumquats, actually. It was kumquats. So I didn't have to give him anything, but he gave me some kumquats, so I didn't have the following Shaila. Can I give a, is it Lifnei Yiv? Do I violate Lifnei Yiv? At least Rabbanon, even if it's on Chad Aver Dinara, it's still going to be Dernis and Rabbanon of handing him food which he will not make a bracha on, or the way the Gemara says it, Lo Yitem Prusa Ela Im Yodea Sheyitel Yodav. And Rabbeinu Yonik, Tamid Rabbeinu Yonik says it, not only for washing hands on bread, but also for making a bracha. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch passes. You can't give food to a person unless you know, it's interesting the way the formulation is. It doesn't say if he might. It's unless you know, unless you have a vados, that he will make a bracha. So that's going to be a big problem with a lot of people. So we have four ways to sort of navigate, get around this. It sounds terrible, but again, when you're in the world of Keruv, Shulchan Aruch works a little bit differently. We'll leave it at that. We have a few ways to get around it. Rabbeinu Yonah has a Kula and says that if your intention is for mitzvah, let's say you want to give it to a poor person, you want to give food to a poor person, and they are not, you know, they don't know about bracha, they're not going to make a bracha, they won't be notzal yadayim. So if it's for mitzvah, you're allowed to. We're just going to extend it because we're not just going to say for tzedakah, keruv itself is a mitzvah, in fact, 9 mitzvahs as we counted. That would also go under the rubric of Rabbeinu Yonah's Kula for tzedakah. Secondly, the Netziv has a Kula, if you hand it to him and walk away, so you don't see him eating it without Netilas Sidaim or a bracha, that also would be okay. We have the beautiful, beautiful Chazon Ish, who says that if you don't give him food, fine, you're being Mekayim this halacha, and you're going to make him not violate eating without a bracha or Netilas Sidaim, but you're going to violate a worse halacha, of Los Tisna Asachicha B'Vavecha, and the general halachas of distancing from Yadus. Then Rosh Hashanah Zalman added that it's actually the same exact mitzvah. The whole Isser that you're violating by handing him food is Lifnei Iver. What's the Lifnei Iver? You're Lifnei Ivering him to eat without a bracha. But by not giving him food, you're Lifnei Ivering him on much bigger averis of either hating Jews and Lomdei Torah or not doing the other things that he could do that you might be able to bring him close to. So it's Lifnei Iver and Lifnei Ivers. You have to pick which is that you have to carefully triage your Lifnei Ivers. And finally, Rosh Scheinberg just made a very practical point. Rosh Zatzal says if you give him food, then you're minimizing the chance of him eating tray food, which is totally the case. In terms of inviting them to come to your house for Shabbos, we all think, oh yeah, sure, no problem, as long as you don't tell them to do it, let them sleep over, but just keep in mind, Ramosha in 2 different places says that if you invite, and his case wasn't inviting people for Shabbos meal, was having children come for a children's program in shul, a learning program, Shabbos morning, Ramosha says that for you doing it, not only are you causing them to be Mechal Shabbos, you're Mesis. Rahman al-Islam, for inviting that person. It's not to be taken lightly. And many people are making not like Ramosha. Moshe Sternbach, the way he puts it, has a beautiful chiddush, just like Chovel, the Chavero, Ba'atzmo, is only also if it's to hurt somebody, but not to heal somebody. If you're Chovel, to give him a shot, an injection, or a Chovel to give him a surgery that he needs, so that won't be also. Chovel is only Derech Meriva. So too, Rav Sternbach, I guess, is Mechadish, that Lifnei Iver is only Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. But if you're doing a Lifnei Iver to help him, to bring him to Torah, that would not constitute Lifnei Iver. And therefore, Rosh Sternbaruch and Shus Van Hagis is making the following three conditions that you make clear to him. A, make clear to him that you prefer him not to drive. B, he shouldn't park in your driveway or in front of your house. And C, only if the motivation is actually to draw him close to mitzvahs, not for a social function like to invite him, to invite your second cousin to your son's bar mitzvah. What the practical that Rav David Cohn, Rabbi Forrest, and I spoke to a Shefter about a few months ago, what many rabbanim say nowadays is invite them to your house, offer them, make sure, as Rav Shefter told me, that he understands clearly that the Orthodox perspective that we do not approve of driving. That must come clear in the once he comes, offer him a place to stay. I'm sorry, when you invite him, tell him he's welcome to come for Shabbos, offer him a place to stay so he doesn't have to be on Shabbos. If he chooses not to, that's not your issue. Okay, if you look at the end of this year, there are two more points there, distorting Torah when you're teaching, and secondly, teaching Goyim, those issues, you could look at your notes for that. Three more minutes, we'll try to do next year. Rabbi Risa's shiur about women's issues. First of all, Srara. There are a number of issues in terms of women having positions of authority. The pasuk says, "Som tesim alech melech, zok tesifri melech v'lo malka." But that only tells me that the highest position of authority, and that of a malka, of royal reign, can't be to a woman. The problem is the Rambam adds four words. Rambam apparently, and he's the only one who does. V'chein kol mesimos shebi Yisrael. Any appointments, let me rephrase that, any positions of authority, not just this position of a malka. So Moshe had the famous Shiloh, what about a woman being a mashgicha in a restaurant? And Moshe says that since the other Rishonim do not cite these extra four words that the Rambam does, they just bring the Sifri without the addition of the Ram that applies to other mesimos, other than a malka. So we could be makel, not like against the Rambam, and b'shas hadcha, because she was an amana and she didn't have a parnasa, and so you come out with the chumra, even though he's giving you a kul, you also come out with the chumra, because he's defining that theoretically, being a mashgicha, a mashgiach, is srara. He defines it is srara, because you're telling the restaurateur what to do and what not. That's how he defines srara. But he says that srara is not a problem, mikra hadin, because we don't have to follow the Rambam. However, he suggests that you should try to work with Rambam, because we always try to work with Rambams. And you should try to have her work under Rav HaMakshir, so it's not really a srara, she's still working for somebody. But the point that you see from Ramosha is that you don't have to follow the Rambam if there is a tzorech gadol. The Salveshik might be more machmir, because he says that aside from the srara issue, okay, Ramosha is makel for not to follow the Rambam for srara, but there's a separate independent issue called minui, appointing a person. What do you mean? I thought minui is mutzah. The Gemara says mefurish, that nashim are shochtos. And that means you could appoint them as a shochet. So Salveshik explained, no. In the olden days, people did shchita in their backyard. So if you do shchita in your backyard and you're a woman, go ahead and do your shchita. However, nowadays, you know, in Europe and now also, where it's an appointment in the city shochet, it's an appointment, there's a separate independent psul called a minui, and that would be a separate issue. And therefore, the Rav would not only disallow a woman from being a rabbi, not only because of Sarah, but even women presidents of shuls, as he is famously known for, because not just of Sarah, but also because of Minui. Beautiful point. If you ever have a discussion, why can't a woman be a rabbi? Next point. So Sarah, okay, that we could argue, what kind of shul is it? There's the decisions made by the rabbi, by the board of directors. Depends on the shul. I assure you, you will be happier if it's, okay, be careful when you become a banner. And get you and work, may know how a shul works. By the way, in this sugya, I advise everybody, whether it's during Musaf Seder or during Halacha Seder, to see Rav Shachtus Tshuva Ikvei Hatzon, and his Sefer Ikvei Hatzon talks about these issues. I don't want to get into them, but it's very fundamental, and it's appropriate for Musaf Seder and Halacha Seder. It's beautiful and it's easy to read. So, why can't women be rabbis? You ever have the conversation, you could say the following. It's a beautiful pshat that Rabbi Reis presented. The Rambam says that smicha l'doros is not just putting your hand on somebody, on your Talmud. It's giving him a reshus ladun dine knasos. Even if we give yoro here, still the idea of smicha is one that has the potential for somebody to be dan dine knasos. And the halacha is that a woman is pasul to be dan. So if the whole idea of the whole concept of smicha is specifically and uniquely to give somebody authority to rule, and part of authorities to rule is one that is roi ladun dine knasa, ladun dine knasa, and women just can't even be in the parasha of being done, so the corollary would be, what would come out would be that smicha would be off limits to women. A ger, on the other hand, even though a ger is pas ladun as Yisrael, a ger is kash ladun as chaveros, therefore he's in the parasha of being done, therefore a ger would be able to be a rabbi, as far as this issue, in terms of is a ger, is a rabbanus srara, which a ger is also memuat from, a ger cannot do, to have position srara, that I know is a discussion about different, speak to people whether the rabbanus is a srara or not, it might also depend on who makes the decisions in that specific shul. In terms of a woman saying Kaddish, the Chavos Yahu is not happy with a woman saying Kaddish because it's going to be Yachalish Kacham and Hagim, and therefore he says the Yeshlim Noah. But if Henkin argued that if it's done in a tzniastic away and they're not wearing clothing Shal America, as we all joked, as we all laughed, he says, Efshir, keep in mind the word Efshir, Efshir Shein Kpeda, therefore one theoretically might be able to, Avalo Bebeis HaKnesses Mamish. He says, so this was led to the general practice that women do say Kaddish in America, but not in the sanctuary where the men are. I believe if you, it does come on Lach Maisim, you might want to speak to Rishav to also to see his perspective on how to look at women saying Kaddish. And in terms of women in paskening and women teaching, look at your notes, and that will relate to Yoatzot. And in terms of bas mitzvahs, Rav Moshe doesn't like the fact that we took our bar mitzvahs out of hand. So it's bad enough we started having all these crazy things at bar mitzvahs. Why should we start making these gala celebrations for a bas mitzvah? But the Sri Deyesh says if you want to inspire a young lady, so if it will be inspiring for her, and keep that in mind, if it will be inspiring for her that she's a bas mitzvah, then you could do it, but as long as it's not in the base knesses, in the sanctuary. And Rav Avadia says also you can have a bas mitzvah and you should sing Zmiras v'tishbacha so that it becomes a sudas mitzvah like in Chanukah, even Yavin. Finally, aliyahs. Why can't a woman get an aliyah? Because a woman, the Bach says that women are not ola because it's covered. It's not covered hatzibur. Oh, but we're an egalitarian community, and for us, it is a kavod if she gets an aliyah. But it's you're not the tzibur. Klal Yisrael is the tzibur. It's not a kavod to the tzibur Klal Yisrael. Therefore, it's not in the hands or the reins of an individual congregation to make this discussion. The main point that Rabbi Reis wanted us to take out of this shir was that these shilas all have to be discussed with the gedolim of the generations, with the manhigim of the generations. They should not be made, these sensitive issues should not be made by any individual rabbi in his individual community without the consultation with the gedolim and manhigim of the Klal Yisrael. We'll daven mincha right now. We didn't do... Does anyone want another one?
Yeah. Okay, what's today?
Thursday. I'll send an email out. Are people here on Sunday? I'm giving call Yom Rishon. I'm giving call Yom Rishon. You're welcome to Kana on the halachas of Bikur Cholim. Very unusual halachas that you never knew about Bikur Cholim. You're invited, but Yeshiva guys are going to call Yom Rishon. We could do it maybe after call Yom Rishon on Sunday lunchtime. You could, what? Oh, there we go. Sunday lunchtime. Sunday lunchtime at 12-ish on Sunday. 12 on Sunday, Bli Neder, unless I forgot something in my schedule. I'll send out an email to confirm. Ashrei Ashrei Veisach, Adi Aluch HaSel, Ashrei Ashrei Veisach, Adi Aluch HaSel.